Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Proper Class Podcast. I'm Laura Checkley.
And I'm Hannah Chiswick.
And we are, of course, here to celebrate all things working class, because if we don't, who the bloody hell will? I've got my dog on my lap, and I said it like my dog then.
Brilliant. It's a new career for you. Britain's Got Talent.
Who the bloody hell will?
Oh dear. As always, we sit down with a working class hero to celebrate their life and achievements and discuss just how they got to where they are today. So who are we celebrating this week, Laura?
Well, do you know what? Sometimes, dear listener, I worry that we might be spoiling you by bringing you brilliant guest after brilliant guest, but we think you deserve it. So this week is no different. Coming from a large Northern Irish family, this week's guest hails from my neck of the woods, Croydon, massive, and also, like me, studied at the UK's only entirely free performing arts school, the Brit School.
Woo woo!
I like her already.
With a CV to die for, she's been gracing our screens in programmes such as Idris Elba's Sky One Comedy in the Long Run, The Office, Self-Centred, Death in Paradise, Call the Midwife, the Emmy-nominated series Joe All Alone, and has been hitting the big screen too in films such as Wimbledon, King of Thieves, Girl on a Bicycle, Riot, Everybody's Going to Die, and British feature film Bull. She can also often be seen hosting on shows such as Something for the Weekend, Sunday Brunch and The Right Stuff. But she is perhaps best known for playing Carly Wicks in the nation's favourite soap, and my favourite soap too, EastEnders. In 2021, our guest was selected by BAFTA to be part of the Elevate programme, which supports working class and other underrepresented talent.
Not content with all of that, she has a fantastic stage career too, appearing at the National Theatre in the play Great Britain, in the acclaimed West End run of One Man, Two Governors, and recently she played the iconic role of Beverly in Mike Leigh's wonderful play Abigail's Party. What an amazing part that is, right? You're right, Sue, something like that, isn't it? She has also been in Two Noble Kingsmen and The Rover at the Royal Shakespeare Company, as well as numerous other prestigious theatres across the UK, including the National Theatre Studio, the Royal Court and the RSC. She's done it all, blimey.
She has been nominated for Celebrity Supporter of the Year 3 times, which she won in 2019. This is an amazing thing that she won for as well, for raising awareness of women giving cord blood at birth, which can then go on to help those dealing with blood cancer.
Oh, wow.
She ran the marathon for dementia awareness in memory of her friend Barbara Windsor. And she's also an ambassador for the Anthony Nolan charity and MenCap. And on top of all that, she's mother to twins, so she has my undying admiration.
And on top of all of that, Hannah, she is best mates with our brilliant producer, Michelle. So she is clearly a woman of dubious, discerning taste. Listeners, give a huge Proper Class Podcast welcome to the brilliant and quite frankly overachieving Kelly Shirley.
Woo-hoo! Well, that's
mate.
Nice.
And that's cut down and all. That's cut down and all, isn't it, Han?
Stop. You know when you get like a flurry of nose from a load of self-tapes and you feel a bit shit and then you hear this and you go, I feel all right now, actually.
It's amazing though, isn't it? Because like, obviously, we talk about this all the time, about work ethic, and it's part of that because you do so much, and it's not just as an actress. You're writing as well, and you're running marathons, and you're doing this, that, and the other. Do you think it's a working class thing? Do you have to keep going? Do you have that sort of, I've got to keep working, no matter what it is?
Yeah, I do. I think it's that kind of like survival of the fittest kind of thing. And I mean, if we don't like carry on like doing the writing and putting ourselves forward, no one else is going to do it for you, are
exactly.
they?
No,
no one's
exactly.
going to have the fight for yourself or for what you believe in other than you. And I'm a bit of a scrapper, and I like it. It's definitely part of my mentality. Yeah.
So, Kelly, we start every week by asking our guest if they could take us back to a place that really reminds them or connects them to their working class past. Where would they take us? So where are you going to take us today?
Right, OK. I'm going to take you both to Selhurst Park, home of the amazing Crystal Palace Football Club.
Yeah.
Which I love so much. And I take you back there to probably the early 90s, mid 90s when I was a kid, and I used to go and watch the games with my dad and my mum. Actually, it's a bit of a family affair, my brother, and we would go to a lovely Chinese chippy called Lap Hing's. We'd start off there and we'd get a lovely pie and some chips, and then I go to the corner shop and I get a sherbet dib dab and loads of other sweets and be off my tits on sugar just watching Crystal Palace. And it was just like the best time, and I'm still a big Eagles supporter, and it's something that's really important in my life because my dad became a youth team coach when I was in my teens.
Nice.
So it's, yeah, that Crystal Palace is, for me, it feels like very, very working class, being around all those people just singing and shouting, and South London. I just think it's just got such a brilliant place.
We know it well.
I actually used to live on that road.
Did you?
So I lived on that road about five doors up from the football stadium, yeah. So on match days, I could open my windows and hear the commentary, and I'd often have like the police horses on my driveway when I come out, yeah. So I literally lived...
Shitting everywhere.
Yeah.
And then I moved in with Hannah for about 3-4 years and... I was there too, weren't I, Han?
Wow. So, yeah, we live right on that road.
Yeah, know it really well. And I'm a huge footy fan, so
I've been
to Selhurst Park. I am a Liverpool supporter. Now, hear me
out.
Because
okay.
my stepdad's a Scouser, and he's been with my mum since I was three.
Okay.
And so our family team was QPR. And as a kid in the 90s, it was like Liverpool or fucking QPR. You're going Liverpool. Yeah. So, I'm a Liverpool supporter. So, but it does feel... inherently working class. I think it gets a bad rep, football.
Well,
and
it's
football
changed
fans
now.
I know they can be a nightmare.
But when we were growing up in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s and onwards, like it wasn't corporate like it is now. It didn't have like the Malcolm Glaziers and it didn't have people having those ridiculously lucrative sports deals
because season tickets are like unbelievable, aren't they? Like elitist, isn't it?
It's changed now. It used to just be about football when you know it sounds silly, it used to be about football, and now it's about everything other than football, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah,
it's become such a massive corporation and yeah, a bit ugly in a way.
I think, though, the women's game, I feel, is injecting the family spirit again a little bit. Like, when I went to see England women's in the final.
Did you?
The Euros, and it was incredible. Yeah, we were sat actually in the German section, and I thought, oh, no, because, you know, I've been to a lot of male football matches, and I thought, oh, God, I hope it's all right. And it was the friendliest atmosphere I've ever, ever experienced. And there were kids there. Han was there, weren't you, up in the rafters, weren't you, Han? But I was sat with the German...
I mean, the first football match he ever saw. Can you imagine that? His first live football match was that England women's final. It was such
amazing.
A brilliant atmosphere. It was brilliant.
And it just took me back. It took me back, Kelly, to, like, the 90s when you would go with all your family and it'd feel really... And I'm not saying families don't go, but... now so much, but it's really expensive, so it is lacking families, because, you know, people that love football probably only afford to go themselves now, not take the whole family.
True. It's become completely elitist.
Let's get back to you. So you grew up that way, did you, Croydon?
I did. I was born in Croydon, and I went to school in a place called Biggin Hill. It's a random little place in Kent, kind of ish near Bromley. So I went to Croydon, to Biggin Hill, and then I moved again to Orpington. I don't know if you know that as well.
Yeah, of course.
Obviously.
and then back to Croydon again, and now I'm in Catford. So I've gone very small kind of area.
So did you move about schools then? Did you have a couple of schools growing up?
Yeah, I did. So I changed to go to... some stuff happened when I was younger, basically. So we had to go and move house and move schools and everything. And so I started off going to infant and then moved to a different place in Orpington.
Right.
And then as soon as I could, I left... it's called Darrett Wood anyway, the place I went to. Just a normal state, yeah. Mixed school, loads of boys. Loved it for a little bit. And then went to Brit School as soon as I was 15.
And how did you hear about the Brit School?
Well, it was in the olden days and there wasn't any like internet and stuff like that. I don't even know how I've heard about. I think it was in the New Shopper. Do you remember the New Shopper magazine?
The New Shopper. Oh did my you? God, I used to deliver the New Shopper.
Did you?
Yeah. That was my first ever job. Now, just a quick story. They used to get delivered to me at my poor mum and dad's house. We used to get the New Shopper delivered, like hundreds of these bloody newspapers. And do you know what? In the end, I never used to do it. And my dad used to go around and do it in the car.
What is it? A magazine what?
It's a free paper, you know, like a South London free thing.
Oh, okay, okay.
The New Shopper. God, I've not thought about that in years.
It's got like local stories in it and then, you know, the local adverts, bed company does deals at the back and you can sell stuff before eBay was around. And
right.
And so that I think there was like a picture of Brit School or something in it. And it just...
Someone doing a leap jump and you're like, fame.
Yeah. I think it was something like that. And I was like, wow, I can't believe it was free.
Yeah.
And that you could just... Anyone could go there.
And so at school, did you find like, were you just like, you loved acting, were you really just drawn to it from a young age? How did you get into it? Are your parents into it? Like, what's the...
No, my mum and dad are really not into it and kind of like make a point of not being into it where I once played Ophelia up at Stafford Castle when I left EastEnders, and it was like a big deal for me going off to do a bit of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
I wasn't at the RSC, you know, but it was in a castle, which was cool. And they came all the way up to have a Chinese, basically, in Stafford, and didn't come and see the show.
Oh, stop!
And didn't watch it.
No. Because they just thought, oh, don't really understand Shakespeare, Kel. So,
it's a shame, isn't it? Because I know my family have felt like that. They've not come to see what they'd call a posh play. So, like, oh, we won't get it, Lorne. And I'm like, I bet you fucking will. I bet you will. It's just everyone else makes you believe that you can't
but
understand
you can't,
Shakespeare.
Yeah, of course.
And, I mean, listen, I've been to some Shakespeare's and not understood a word because they're done badly.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying, but when it's done well, it's
accessible, isn't it, to everyone?
There's this thing about Shakespeare, isn't there, where it's like, you know, I'm still as an actress a bit terrified of it because I just think like, oh, all that flowery language, I won't be able to do it because I've been told people like you don't do Shakespeare. Or I was told back in the day.
That's because there's loads of like, I love Shakespeare and I've directed a few, but there's just so much bollocks spoken about Shakespeare on purpose by people who want to make it seem closed and very, you know, when people, you know, when I've directed it, you'll get a couple of actors who are like, oh, do you know if that's how it was referred to in the first folio? I'm like, I don't care. No one cares. You know, Jean, who's coming to watch it, doesn't care how it was referred to in the first folio. She just wants to know, like, what the hell it means and should she engage with that character and follow their story? And you're only speaking like that to make other people feel like idiots.
Yeah.
From a scholar's point of view, if you want to teach it at university or look at the history of it, of course, but in a rehearsal room, I've got no patience with it.
No. Let's go back to school, actually. So did you find, so you were sort of leaning towards the drama, like you just sort of naturally doing it then, like looking at telly programmes again, I want to be in that. Is it just sort of a natural progression?
Well, the first thing that made me want to be an actor is when I saw Rodinini's Pink Windmill and Grot Bags and Tea Bag and T-shirt and all that. And I just thought, wow. And I couldn't believe that they got paid to, you know, to mess around and have like Rice Krispies stuck on their face and be all.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that was when I was about six or seven. And then when I was at school, I just felt I felt a bit stupid, I suppose. I wasn't in the high sets for things. I wasn't really pushed. And I just was kind of like coasting along. And when I was doing drama, I felt that I was good at something. But I was also learning, because obviously when you read plays, you delve into like different parts of history. You learn stuff, you know, geography. It fans out, doesn't it, to so many other things. And about emotions and all.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it filled me more than that mainstream education did, without sounding too wanky. So school just didn't click, and I just felt a bit thick when I was there. And yeah, like I said, when I saw the thing in New Shopper, I just was like, Mum, can I please try this? And my mum and dad have never stopped me from doing anything, whatever I wanted to do. I tell you what else happened. I had a really good drama teacher at
oh God, so important, isn't it?
At normal school, called Kim, and she was very complimentary, and it gave me that little boost of confidence.
Oh,
it's important, those teachers along the way that go, you should give that a go, you know.
Yeah, definitely. My husband's a teacher, and I think he's just the best thing ever. And when he comes back and he tells me about some of the kids And when he gets like, when they make him little cards and things, and like,
oh, I just think,
oh, thank fuck for you, Phil, like going out there and making some kids feel like they're, you know, good at something and worth it.
And that what that is, those things are a feasible career as well. Because I remember when I sat in my careers advice, remember you used to go and sit with one of those careers advisors go and say what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
She was not too bad. I mean, she was just like, I mean, you can't be an actor. And I said, well, I was already like at a dance school, so I sort of knew you could, because there was other kids there going to Sylvia Young's and stuff. I was
and
like,
there's
well,
a TV.
You can be an actor. And there's, and those people on that TV are doing it, so I do know it's a career. But she was like, you'd be better off, like, you know, doing some science and doing like become a PE teacher or something, 'cause you're good at football or whatever. But I know loads of other people have been in with their careers advisors, just like, it wasn't, especially back when we went to school, that wasn't a career really in normal comprehensive.
Yeah. I went to a comprehensive Thomas Tallis in South London. I went to Thomas Tallis. And my careers advisor, like I marched into the porter cabin saying I wanted to be a theatre director. She was literally like... My careers advisor suggested I'd be a hairdresser. And I think if we all look at my hair now, we can agree that would not have been a wise... I don't know why, though. Like, I hadn't suggested anything about wanting to... Like, anything. I think she said, oh, you're quite creative. I was like, right. I remember that because it was my 16th birthday.
So you went to the Brit School, which, by the way, I've got to give a shout out to Brit School, because it's so incredible. They've been doing it for so many years. One of the only non-fee-paying... performing arts colleges out there, and it makes it possible for kids like you and I, Kelly, like, to go and train. And aren't the facilities incredible? Better than any drama school that you pay tens of thousands of pounds to go to. The facilities are incredible, aren't they?
Just the atmosphere there, because it's...
Yeah, it's electric, isn't it?
Everybody really wants to be there, don't they? And
yeah, and it's the first time you're experiencing that as a teenager, going, oh, I'm where I belong.
Yeah, and because of it being free... You've got a real mishmash of people.
Yeah.
You must have been there the same time as me, surely.
Yeah, I was like 96 to 98.
Maybe I just missed you then.
I was there with Dame Bowers.
Oh, you name dropper, you.
Me and Dame Bowers. But when I got to the Brit School, that, like you said, there was tons of working class kids there. It was really diverse. Yeah. And it just felt like it was the first time in any sort of education where I felt like I was finally being like myself.
Yeah, me too. Could just be. And it was just exciting, wasn't it? And people like make it.
And they celebrate your class and your difference, don't they? They celebrate. They don't try and knock it out of you. And
that's when you get to drama school afterwards. After you've just found yourself as a teenager.
Yeah.
And you go to drama school and they say, oh no, change your name, change your voice.
Change accent, the way you. Yeah. So, was that what happened for you next? Was it drama school after Brit School?
Yeah, because of my mum and dad not being connected in the business, and I didn't really know how to get a job or an agent or what do I do? And even though the Brit was good with a couple of auditions and stuff, it's not really facilitated, is it, in that way? To kind of, it's not like it hasn't got an agency. It's all about doing bits of work, isn't it? And so when you left, it was a bit like, okay, right, what do I need to do, isn't it? And what is the next step? And so I was working in a nursing home in Dartford called Broadacre Manor.
Is this after the Brit school?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I worked on the cloakrooms at BAFTA actually.
Oh, did
as
you?
Well, which was really great because I got to see loads of famous people and see what they were really like.
Yeah, right.
And then when I was working there, that's how I paid for my money to go to do the auditions.
Because
I had to pay for them. Yeah. And so auditioned for a couple of them, only a couple because they're so expensive.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, and it still is, obviously. I know you've spoken about this before.
Yeah.
Again, elitist.
Yeah, of course it is.
And then I got into a place called Webber Douglas, which doesn't exist anymore.
Webber Douglas was amazing, but it doesn't exist, does it?
Yeah, it was. Didn't it join with like Central or something like that?
It kind of did, and it kind of just fizzled out, really.
Yeah. And some really big names came from Webber Douglas, because I remember looking at that prospectus and going, oh, that looks posh.
Yeah, Ross Kemp.
Ross Kemp, come on.
I mean, big name. Angela Lansbury, R.I.P. She was there.
Did she go to Webber Douglas?
Yeah.
Fucking love Angela. Oh, God, so sad about Angela Lansbury.
I know,
that broke my heart.
I know, 97, though.
It's all right, isn't it?
That's bloody good, isn't it?
and a career that spans decades and like, what a legend.
Yeah. I saw her on stage once, and she forgot her line, and it's the only time I've ever been. I went to Broadway to watch a mate in a show, and and experience New York, not just to go and see a show.
Yeah, sure. And just flying over to see a friend.
And we're not friends anymore. Actually, we had a massive falling out. But anyway, that's another story.
Hi, if you're listening, and you want to reach out, let us know.
So I went to go and see, it was in a little night music. And,
yes, I remember she did that, yeah.
Oh, and the woman who's got an amazing career, who was in the Darling Buds of May originally. But mine's gone blank.
Oh, Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yes, she was in it as well. And,
sure.
Angela, she forgot her line and she just stood on stage and went, line, and everyone just stood up and clapped and went, yeah, they just loved it.
Isn't that mad? They loved it that she forgot.
Yeah. And then when she got it back again, there was a massive clap again. I was like, wow, this place is nuts.
I know, Broadway's something else, isn't it?
Yeah.
You walk on stage and they applaud.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So you go to Webber Douglas, right? And you sort of suggested maybe, was that the first time you thought, oh, like aware of class and how you spoke and where you'd come from?
100%. It never, ever occurred to me about class or anything like that beforehand. It's only when you start getting kind of like typecast. Remember, we were going around in a big circle saying, what do you think your casting is and stuff? And so,
I hate that question.
I know. And
also, you're at drama school. How are you supposed to know that yet? Like, do you know what I mean? I don't know. Let me get out there and have a go and then we can talk. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, totally. And but then it was all like, you know, like wench and this and that. I don't mind. I love wenches. Okay?
I always got prostitute.
Prostitute, I mean, great parts, yeah. Really. And
police woman.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you're doing it now, aren't you, I suppose, in Scrooge.
Yeah. A prison guard, yeah, any sort of authority.
That's your upwardly mobile part, though, isn't it? It's like...
That is my upwardly mobile, definitely.
You've done a rise from prostitute to, like, prison guards, quite...
I remember, Kelly, at drama school, we did it. Are you upstairs or downstairs?
Yes, we did that too. Downstairs.
Everyone went, Laura is definitely downstairs. I went, yes, where the interesting characters are, so don't give a shit.
Yeah, exactly. But that's funny, though. Like, you just get pigeonholed so much.
So quickly, yeah.
Fucking hell. And then it kind of stays with you, doesn't it? Then you feel like you can't do those other...
And how did you get through drama school? Did you get a scholarship?
Yeah, I got a it's called a Dada Award,
Dance and Drama Award. I too got one of those, Kelly. Yeah.
Yay.
I don't think that, do they exist anymore?
They since don't.
They bloody don't.
Because you would have gone to drama school when I did around about the same time the Labour government was in, and there were just scholarships galore, and it was just like,
brilliant.
Meant that loads of working class kids and people from deprived backgrounds could train.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got that for 2 years, and then the third year, we had to pay for it ourselves. And so I worked at BAFTA, I'd written to all the people. I got all the addresses of all the famous people.
Oh, wow. And
I wrote to them, and I got Anthony Hopkins, Klang, paid for my last year.
No way. That's amazing. Yeah. What an amazing man.
I know. So I'm in my third year. I can't afford to pay for it anymore.
And he was like, great, I've got a massive tax bill. That'll do. I'll write that off.
Yeah. Well, in fact, he wrote back to me and said he just bought Snowdonia and he couldn't afford to pay for me. And I was like, and I wrote back again and I said, well, if you just pay for Snowdonia, do you mind just giving us a little bit of cash? And I promise I'll be really, really grateful. I really hope I get to meet him at some point to say thank you.
Oh, that's amazing. When I was trying to fund my Edinburgh show, me and my Dublat partner did the same. We wrote to loads of famous people. And it was amazing. Like Miranda Hart gave us money. Victoria Wood gave us money. But the loveliest thing of all was June Whitfield put a tenner in a card and sent it
like
in the post to us.
Can't
and honestly,
get better than that,
like
can
it
you?
Was my birthday, and I was so fucking over the moon.
Oh,
so you finished drama school?
Yeah.
Then what happens?
Right. So I was really lucky that somebody dropped out of the second year show, and so I was bumped up. It was to play an Essex girl in a play called Outside Edge.
I can't see that for you.
yeah. And so I ended up being in this show, and a casting director called Di Carlin, who's not casting anymore, saw me in it, and she got me in to play audition for, it's called Dr. Jekyll, well, you know, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde is. Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, but it's a film. And it had John Hannah in it. It was to kind of play the Julie Roberts part in the reboot, but it was like skanky wenchy part that I was doing, not the kind of like American-y beautiful. Yeah. And I was just really lucky that I got it, and then I went off to film that in Lithuania.
That's amazing. So you go off to Lithuania, presumably you go back, you do your showcase, you get an agent, and then you're on your way, is that right?
Yeah, I did. I got an agent and everything. But I learned a really good thing where doing this film, it was with working title, it was, you know, really big part. I thought I was going to be like the next big thing. And of course, boom, like the film doesn't do as well as it was going to be. And it was a really good learning curve for me, like not to be like Billy Big Shit, basically. And
and so early on, that's a big lesson so early on, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. And I went back to work at the nursing home. I was doing bingo calling and doing catheters and colostomy bags, and it was the best thing for me. Because it keeps happening now in my career. I think, oh, this is it.
Yeah.
Oh, fucking hell, it's not, you know.
Never. I know.
I think sometimes it can actually, it can be quite cruel for people. I noticed it in the pandemic, right? When everything went to shit, obviously, everyone in our industries, be that like theatre or film or whatever, everything just stopped overnight. And I noticed that some people who've perhaps had the sort of journey you're describing, which is up one minute, then back to the nursing home, and then another brilliant break, and coped with it quite well because we're just used to it. But some people...
We're resourceful.
The people who I noticed really struggled are those people who sort of came straight out of college, maybe into a West End lead, have stayed there pretty solidly for a few years, and then suddenly it all disappeared. And they had no resilience to go in, well, this is the ups and downs that we sort of all experience. And I think sometimes that happening to you early in your career is like a massive gift. Because it just takes the curse off, like, going forward, everything having to be a success. Because it just can't be. You're not going to have a 30-year career where everything you do is a hit. It's just unrealistic. So you're back at the nursing home, and it's not the end of the world. You're doing your bingo. But what's the job that gets you out of there? What happens next?
Firstly, at the when I was doing the bingo stuff, I heard for the first time ever. Do you know what 69 is known as? When I called it out 69, do you know what the old people used to shout out?
What? No.
Dinner for two. Can you believe that? And I was so like,
I've never heard that.
Why is there a sitcom about bingo callers called Dinner for Two? I do not know.
I'm sure it's out there somewhere on someone's shelf. Yeah. We won't be making that.
We won't be making Dinner for Two.
So even though obviously like I wasn't doing a big acting career like I thought I was going to do, I laughed so much. I learnt so much. I was like, fuck. It was an education working there.
So how old were you when EastEnders come along?
I was 22, and I'd done a really nice period drama called 20,000 Streets Under the Sky. It's still my favourite job ever. I met mates on it, and
did you play a wench in that one? Or
I played the prostitute.
Yay! I feel like that's a step up.
and it spanned 10 years, and it was great, you know, playing a character for that long, and from the 20s right through to the 30s. And Simon Curtis was the director, and it was really beautifully written by Kevin Elliott, who passed away a couple of years ago.
And so would you say that was a bit of a break, like a bit of a, oh, this is a big job and this is going to make a difference? Like
it was, I felt like I did some good work. I felt like I'd been challenged a bit and I'd done something that felt nice. Yeah. And the producer for that, Kate Harwood, was going off to EastEnders.
Right.
And then, so she then said, well, in fact, it was with the Wiggy, Anna Morena, who said, I don't know if you ever worked with her. But she's like, Kate, you're going off to EastEnders. Kel's perfect.
Brilliant. She should be your agent, huh? She said.
You bloody should.
So did things really change for you, like, in terms of your life being in EastEnders? Was that like a... Because obviously you've done loads of work by then, but there's something about being on someone's TV, like, three times a week, isn't there? Like, were you suddenly...
It was five nights a week back then, wasn't it?
Blimey, yeah, of course.
Nearly, yeah. Because you were in it at a time when it was... at its peak, I think. Like, we were talking to Louisa Litton, and she was in it at a real peak time, and it's such a different...
I was there when Lou was
there. Yeah, you were there. You were both there at a real peak time, and it was, like Louisa said, it was, like, overnight success, really. Like, I went into Primark the day after she'd, like, aired, and it was, like, insane.
Yeah.
Did you find that?
Yeah, it's a different kind of fame, I suppose, where people feel that they really know you and you get followed and people come up to you. And I remember my mum my mum had some bad news, and we were in Bluewater, and we went to a restaurant, and she was crying, and this person was coming up to us, like just wouldn't leave us alone, and it was just really inappropriate. And
exactly, yeah.
When I worked there, because I was mentored by Barbara Windsor, who I love so much, and I miss her like crazy. She taught me so much about, you know, obviously being, you know, very gracious for, you know, to like fans, I suppose, like fans of the show, and always having time for people. And I just had to keep reminding myself what Barbara was telling me, because all I wanted to say was, "God, can't you see my mum's crying? Like, this could go away." But it's just like, it was constant. It's a different feeling about it, that kind of show. And I do get it. And you know, without people being interested,
of course,
you're nothing.
Yeah, of course. And it's hard to understand, isn't it, that we are all normal. Hold on, my mum's just having a cry here.
Yeah.
What did your parents think of it? What was your parents' reaction to? What have your parents, because like, obviously they came up to Stafford, they were into the Chinese, but not the Shakespeare. But EastEnders and stuff, and obviously all the other brilliant work we've done, not just EastEnders, like all the film and TV stuff. How do they feel about it? How have they engaged with your success?
EastEnders, I don't want to be down on my mum and dad, because they really, have not... not let me do anything, like I said before. And they've always been, all right, okay, well, you know, whatever, go for
it. Yeah, whatever you want, yeah.
But I do remember when I got it, their attitude was like, oh, we'll have to watch that crap now.
I literally love your parents so much. What brilliant people to have as listeners, though. There's no chance of you getting, like, carried away, is there?
I know, but I think that's why I've got issues. I do.
And so how was life post-EastEnders? Like, did you find it difficult? Because I know it's easy to get typecast. I mean, we're typecast anyway, being working class, as we've discovered, you know, wench, prostitute, etc.
Yeah.
But then there's a different type of typecasting that happens with soaps, isn't there?
Yeah, I found more that when I came out of it, that certain casting directors wouldn't see me because I was a soap actress.
Yeah.
I mean, even now, actually, that I still have a little bit of that. We need to go down the pub so we can have a good old, you know... and name and shame.
Yeah. No, but it's interesting you say that, because Louisa felt the same as well, and has felt the same coming out in and out of EastEnders, and saying that, yeah, there are some casting directors that won't see her.
Do you know what? It's really funny, isn't it? I mean, I've not worked in America loads, but I've worked there a little bit. And I was an associate on a Broadway show, but the cast in that show were people who were doing big TV shows. You know, okay, so Christine Baranski was in that play. She just finished doing Mamma Mia the musical. We were doing, the play was like a farce that was on Broadway. She was in that. Then she was off to do some Shakespeare. Then she was, and I was just like, we just, even with our biggest stars, we just don't allow people to move that easily from one thing to another. We're right, even within like, we're just deeply suspicious of that for some reason.
Yeah.
Like we go, oh no, you can't, you know, you can't be, but you are doing that. Like you probably don't feel like that, but that's, looking at your CV, you go, bloody hell, that isn't easy in this country that's so class bound, to go to the RSC, then do EastEnders, be at the National, do film. It's like, it's an amazing, you are moving around a lot more than a lot of people do.
So obviously, like, your career's going brilliantly, and you're doing that with, you know, you've had children in the middle of all of that as well.
Oh.
And I knew you'd done loads, but honestly, just going through your CV, I was like, wow, like, this is a CV. Like, this is a proper example of a proper jobbing actress that's been jobbing over decades. And it's like, that is actually the reality of this industry, you know, well, your career. That's a really successful one. Do you, I mean, obviously we're all coming at this from a much more privileged place now than how we grew up and stuff. Do you still feel very working class? Do you still consider yourself working class? Do you still very connected to that?
I do. I think it's partly to do with where I live in South London, that I feel like I'm with my people.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When I lived in Crouch End, when I was working on EastEnders, I felt very not like that.
It's quite middle class, Crouch End.
Yeah, it just was. It just jarred. It wasn't right. But now I'm here in Catford, and
yeah.
I feel
I see some sights and I feel like I'm part of something, part of a community. But I'm very lucky because of EastEnders. I bought a bloody house when I was 23.
Wow.
That's amazing, isn't it?
And that's with my mum and dad. They were like, make sure you do it, you get yourself on the property ladder now. And thank God, because I wouldn't have been able to without that gift of a job.
Yeah.
But then because I own a house, that makes me feel like my working class, like roots and that.
But also it's about me and Hannah always talk about this on the podcast when we bore our listeners to death, but it's about that actually I don't want to be anything else. I don't want to be, I want to stay really rooted. I don't know if that's the same for you, but I'm really proud of my roots. I never used to be. I used to, as a youngster, I used to like, when I went to my posh dance school, I used to try and speak posher and whatever. But now I just really embrace it. And I love my people. I love where I come from and I'm really proud of it.
Yeah. It's important, isn't it? It's to feel part of something and be part of, know where you're from and take things, don't take things for granted and all those things. I mean, we are so privileged, aren't we, being in our business, because you get go to these wanky, swanky awards and it's all, putting ourselves in the back. And
how do you, just really quickly, how do you feel at those wanky, swanky awards? Do you feel out of place still or do you feel like, no, I'm in this, I should, yeah.
I mean, I haven't been invited to them for a little bit, but...
You will.
But a bit of both, really, because I used to be waitressing as well as I used to do the soap awards
and going along, with Volavons and everything and meeting people and seeing it from that side and then going along being an actor and seeing it from the other side. And I feel quite privileged to have seen done both. But when I go every now and again to like BAFTA or something, I always pinch myself and go, wow, this is fucking cool. But at the same time, I like coming back to Catford.
Yeah, yeah.
How have you felt in some of those like spaces that are so traditionally seen as sort of middle and upper middle class, like going to the RSC, and how have those things been? Have those spaces felt all right? Have you had a bit of imposter syndrome there or?
Yeah, of course. I remember when I was at Webber G, and
WG.
The vocal coach Carol, who passed away quite recently, she that classic thing of saying, you're never going to work at RSC, never going to work at doing Shakespeare because the way you speak. But then when I was there, my twins were from 9 months to 18 months old, and I was just
blimey.
Wow, Kelly, Jesus.
I was in the thick of it, and so I didn't really absorb it all, I suppose, because I was just breastfeeding and
that's more important, wasn't it? It's probably brilliant in a way that you were like, I'm not going to worry about how I'm speaking. I've got to get back and breastfeed and exactly.
The RSC were amazing, by the way, we've allowing me to have my, not allowing me to have my twins up there, but, making that job work. I had an amazing director, Blanche McIntyre, who really, really
didn't make you feel, terrible that you had to rush off and stuff. That's super important, isn't it?
So good. And let them come into rehearsals every now and again. Yeah. And because without that support from her in particular, and I wouldn't have been able to do that job, and my husband.
I think it's really important, isn't it? Like Hannah and I have both taught at drama schools, and I that narrative where, particularly when we went to drama school, I think it's really changed now.
It's definitely changed.
It's definitely changed because that language, saying to somebody, oh, you'll never do Shakespeare because how you speak. And it's not that teacher's fault at the time. It's what she had learned or they had learned, and they were just passing on what they thought and how the industry worked back then. But those things harm over time, don't they? They sort of, they dig deep and they sit there and go, well, someone like you who speaks like you doesn't belong there. I've always thought, oh, I'll never work at the RSC. I don't think that now, but I did coming out of drama school because I just thought, well, posh people that speak posh go and do Shakespeare, didn't they? And also educated people go and do Shakespeare and stuff. But I think it is a narrative that has definitely changed over time. And I know Hannah and I have been in drama schools, and we can certainly say for where we've worked, that narrative has changed, hasn't it, Hannah? And it's important.
Definitely.
You've such a responsibility when you're teaching in drama schools to go, you can do anything.
Yeah.
That was always my motto. my motto. Get out there. Who knows? Don't close off anything. Get all the doors open and see what fucking goes and get in it, you know, like, that's it, right?
Yeah. Back to being scrappy, there you go.
That's it, but back to being scrappy.
The thing
is, it's the same though.
Go on, sorry.
With being a mum though as well, like those doors sometimes feel like they do shut for you with certain things because it is, you know, you've experienced, haven't you, Hannah, with like trying to have a family and work at the same time. And
I feel really like there's a few things in my life that I've felt really sort of passionate about being loud about. One of them is about, you know, the fact that I can speak like this and, you know, be a South London girl, and it doesn't mean that I can't direct Ibsen, which is something I say a lot. Like, there's no reason why not. The two things don't cancel each other out. And also, I left having a baby, if I'm honest, till really late. I didn't have my son. Not really late, but I was 38 when I got pregnant. He was born when I was 39. And I think I left it later than I might have because I absolutely couldn't believe that I could carry on being a director and be a mum, because I just haven't really seen that many women successfully doing that. It's not to say, that's not putting it at their door. The industry just wasn't set up for that. So when I had a baby, I was like, right, I've got to dig deep here and be really visible with him. So he went to rehearsals and he went to production meetings, and I wheeled him into rooms full of men where I was having production meetings. And I was like, he's a baby, you know, he's here. He'll sleep. It'll be fine. And actually it was amazing how many women got in touch and said, oh, it's been really amazing to see you doing that. But it felt really, really scary.
Oh, fair play. I wish I was there to see that as well. It's important, isn't it? And then it bleeds down, doesn't it?
And then hopefully, yeah, like you're saying, like, I feel one of the best things about my job is that I can have women in, or not only women, you know, people with caring responsibility, it can be men. It's mostly women, let's be honest. But, you know, in the company, and say, it's all right. Like, you can leave for the school run. Don't feel like you've got to lie. Don't feel like you've got to pretend you haven't got kids. Of course, I can give you the rehearsal schedule in advance. Yet, no worries. Come in. I'll make sure you don't need to be in by 9:30, whatever. And it's just a lovely thing to be able to do that for people. It's, you know.
I mean, a much bigger conversation is how it stops for women. Like, when you are an actor and you have children, and how it can just totally, totally stop. I've seen it with loads of my mates who were really jobbing actors, and they stop, they have kids, and they can't get back into the industry. And that I find just, yeah, really, it's really shit.
To be continued.
To be continued, 100%.
Kelly, we've got so much in common. It's amazing. We could talk forever. We're going to have to have
and
that.
And we do have to go down the pub.
We're going to have to go down the pub and carry it on for sure. I mean, it's actually currently only 10:30 in the morning, so let's not go right now. But, well, I don't know why not. Actually, why not? It's Friday. Listen, thank you so much. It's been so amazing. We could carry on talking forever and ever. But
I know.
We're going to have to let you go eventually. So we always finish each week by asking our guests, saying, like, we've been celebrating you for the last hour. Was a working class hero of yours that you might like to celebrate? Is there someone you can think of?
Well, I can obviously think of so many. I would say my mum is one of the. Can I have tea? I'd say my mum because she worked in a nurse, and then where we lived down in Orpington, there's a big traveller community, and she used to surgery. She went back to do she'd an open university course, and she set up her own little doctor surgery because lots of people travelling the community didn't want to go to the doctor or the hospital, and it was just amazing.
Wow.
And she is a brilliant human being. So her getting emotional, it's because I'm pregnant. So no. I'm just like, well,
I didn't know you're pregnant.
Congratulations. I didn't know.
It's just also why I'm like, this whole stuff about talking about parents and visibility, like, so much in the forefront of my mind.
And also, like, your parents have had a massive, you know, hand in your and where you are now. Like, that's, you know, they let you go off, and I say let you, but they encourage you to go off, and they've been supportive the whole time. What's your mum's name?
She's called Mickey.
I love that. Yeah, and then you wanted someone else.
Oh, and then the other is I work at Lewisham Food Bank just once a week, and it's such a working class community. And there's a guy, he doesn't work there anymore, but he's called Gary, and he is
he's just the best guy, and so generous and so thoughtful, and just dedicated his life to the Trussell Trust, the food bank, and I've had great conversations with him. He's opened my eyes to so much. He's educated me, and wow, he's a proper like Southeast London old bloke. He's full of gold.
Oh, he sounds amazing, Kelly. So listen, we are celebrating Mickey.
Yeah.
Gary.
Yes.
And you, Kelly Shirley. Thank you so much for coming on. Honestly, it's been just, I feel like I've known you forever. So we're definitely, the four of us, going to get down that pub. The four of us, I mean, Michelle, she's there, guys, our producer. But honestly, thank you so much. It's like, and good luck with the baby. Good luck with everything coming your way. And thank you so much. It's been lovely chatting.
Thank you. Bye.
Oh, do you know what? I feel like Kelly is lived a very sort of parallel life to us two. She's a real South London girl, which is something very close to my heart. Yeah. She's a Brits girl. She's very close to your heart.
Yeah.
And just an all-round good egg.
Yeah, and dipped in and out of theatre and TV. I take my hat off to her and doing that and having kids and still going. Like, it's hard. It's hard to keep going. I've seen it with my mates that have had kids. It's really hard to, you know, A, get back into the industry. I actually feel like I've known her for years. You know, we often sometimes get those guests where we've literally never met them. And then we're like, right, we need to go down the pub with this person. She's so brilliant. And just like one of us, really.
I can't wait for her to get down to Hythe and us hang out on the beach. I'll be looking forward to that. She's amazing.
You will invite me, won't you?
Yeah, sure. Okay, anyway, thanks for listening. We'll be back, of course, next week with another amazing guest. I feel so lucky. What brilliant guests we get. We really are so lucky.
We are, aren't we?
And you're all right too, Laura. You're not too bad yourself. So,
thanks, babe. All right, guys, we'll see you next week. And remember, cape it colossae.
I take it back.
Proper Class Podcast is produced by Michelle Farr-Scott for Rangabee Productions, edited by James Torrance, with music by Tommy Music.
Why don't I believe you there, Hannah? Maybe it's your tone. Anyway, we are back in a couple of weeks' time. We're not here next week, folks, because, quite frankly, we have lives. Well, we don't actually. We just have work commitments, and that's really boring, isn't it? But we will be back in a couple of weeks with some new guests, some new and exciting guests. So join us then. And until then, enjoy the sunshine. Get a fan on you. It's bloody boiling, isn't it? And remember, whilst you're doing that, keep it classy.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.